Hey everyone, welcome back to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Being a strong leader in business is essential, and I know that we all know this, and especially if you listen to this podcast, you probably get the fundamentals. But so few of us actually take the time to do this well. Today, I'm going to be talking to Brian Gottlieb. After a highly successful career building and exiting a $150 million a year business that he literally built from scratch in the remodeling space, Brian wrote a book called Beyond the Hammer. It gives contractors an easy-to-follow framework on a path to becoming a better leader. In this episode, he breaks down the five foundational pillars that helped him lead a team of just one in his garage up to a team of 600 when he had actually exited. Trust me, you don't want to miss this. This book resonated with me so much, I got Brian to give us an actual chapter that we can download and all read and start to utilize in our business. So check that out in the description. And with all that said, let's get started with Brian. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Brian, I am stoked to have you on today. Thank you so much for taking time with us. You, my friend, have built one of the most successful home service companies in North America, scaled it up, exited. You've done kind of the dream, my friend. We've got lots to talk about today, but I would love to hear from you just a little bit about you first, your story, how you got here.
Yeah.
And let's start with that.
Yeah. Hey, Danny, thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it. And you do such great work with so many people that so desperately need what you provide. And you really fill a great void in this business. So I'm thrilled to be on this. Yeah. My journey was a fun one, right? I think like a lot of people in the industry, in the home improvement or home services industry, we might have a job somewhere and then we leave that job and we just want to kind of work for ourselves. And before you know it, we start to have a business in front of us. And that was kind of my journey. I started my company in 2009 in the back of a friend's warehouse on a plastic folding table with $3,000 in cash. My only goal was to not do so much traveling and get off the road and not miss dinners with my family. Over time though, the business really started to grow, and sure, we stubbed our toe along the way, but ultimately the business grew into three separate companies. One company was called Jacuzzi Bath Remodel of Arizona, one company Tundraland Home Improvements, and then a couple of Renewal by Anderson businesses. Combined, I got up to 600 employees and $150 million in revenue, and I sold each one of the businesses off, and it was a fun ride. But you know, what's really cool, Danny, is I didn't do it alone. I had a great team, and it's so important in business. It's so important.
Today's podcast is going to be all about leadership and culture and the book that you wrote, Beyond the Hammer. And I'm curious to know, just because we didn't all start out being pros in that kind of thing. Like it's learned over time. How did you evolve? How did your leadership evolve from those early days on that plastic table to running 600 people all across the country?
Right. Well, what's interesting is in the early days of business, if you would have said, Brian, you're going to build this massive business and you're going to never run a sales call, I'd be like, you're crazy. I have to be in every single appointment because that's what I do. I sell. And I remember one day I was pulling up to somebody's home and I'm on the phone with the production department. And I'm on the phone with a customer and I'm pulling up into this prospect's driveway. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, I hope they don't really need anything because I got to get out of here. I got other stuff I need to do. And in that moment, I realized I'm probably like the worst salesperson that I would ever want to work for me. So, you know, we evolved. Right? Well, there's always the debate of, do you hire to your strengths or do you hire to your weaknesses? And I think it's both end. I don't think it's either or. It's much easier to onboard your strength, and it's much easier to replicate that. It's very difficult for me to onboard my weakness because I don't know anything about it and I'm not the right person to maybe onboard them. So I think it's really about, I think the evolution for me is realizing that I have to keep a learning mindset. And I remember I was sitting down with one of my salespeople some years ago, and we were a much smaller company at the time, and I needed him to take on an operations role. He was very good at production. And I sat down, we were doing $30 million at the time, and I said, I want you to be my ops manager. And he said, Brian, I've never run the back end of a $30 million company. And I said, me either, but we're going to figure it out together. So I think it's kind of like that. It's been a wild ride. It's been fun.
I found, you know, we're not nearly the size of you are. We have about 55 people on our team right now. And I found that, like, my ability to see through people, see things in people that maybe they don't even see for themselves, right, and find that hidden untapped potential is some of the biggest magic that I could bring to our organization. It's not about me being the leader that does it all for them. It's not about me, yeah, you know, even sometimes even being the best recruiter. It's finding within the people we have, how do I kind of help them realize their own potential? Because I think sometimes they don't even see it.
Oh, it's so important, and you're absolutely right. It's why I don't really, I mean, how much emphasis should you put on a resume? It's nice if you see one, but you know, if I see a lot of job hopping, I don't get too stuck on that because maybe they just haven't found the right fit. And if I truly believe in my culture and I truly believe in what we're doing and the purpose of the organization, then maybe, just maybe, they can be successful here, even though they weren't successful somewhere else. And that, I think that's really the opportunity for leadership.
See people for who they are, where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. On the note of job hopping, I have found it extremely challenging because everybody has 2 to 3 years and then the next job. And that's just like the norm now. And when I'm working with our HR team, they're like, Danny, like, you got to get used to this because this is what's normal.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh man. Anyway, I was thinking about this. So you wrote a book called Beyond the Hammer, and it's all about leadership and culture. Why write about, of all the things you could have written about, all the experience you've had over the years, why did you choose that as the topic to write about?
Yeah, because in the early days of starting a business, right, where the entrepreneur is the only person working in the business, right, the performance of the business, actually the goal of business is just survival. It's just, how do I stay in business for another day? And over time, maybe you move from survival mode to maybe you have a job and it's a job from hell. Nobody else wants that job because you're working a million hours and your phone doesn't stop ringing. But to really build a business, now you have to start hiring people. You have to build a team. And performance of the organization is no longer based on how well the entrepreneur performs. It's how well the teams perform. And that's both when the leader is watching and when they're not looking. So a lot of it comes down to, you know, what drives performance in a business. And I think it really comes down to mindset and culture. How do people think and feel inside of the business? Because how they think and feel affects how they behave. And how they behave is ultimately how the business performs. So I really wanted to go deep on how to create the right mindset, the right culture, really the right environment so success can happen. Because you can have all the leadership principles in the world, but if you're not creating the right environment for growth and success and people development, then, you know, it's just leadership phrases or things on the wall that are written down without any real meaning or impact.
I think about this in our industry a lot. Like, at some level, we can have all the brand we want. We can call ourselves a construction company or a plumbing company, but we're a people development company, are we not? Like, we are, our people are our business. They are the biggest asset that we own.
I've told the story that when I first started my business, if you had asked who we were, I would have said, well, you know, we're a construction company. If you'd have asked me once I had, like, I don't know, 15 salespeople, I would have said, maybe a little arrogantly, I would have said, well, you know, we're a sales and marketing company that happens to be in home improvements. But if you asked me what really allowed us to grow, we were a training organization. That's what we were. We had to be in the business of training people. As long as I have been in this industry, I'm 65 years old, okay? So I've been in it for a lot of years. There's always been a labor shortage. There's always a labor shortage. So guess what? This year, there's going to be a labor shortage. So how do we break those rules that hold us back? How do we create a new set of rules? How do we be in the business of saying, you know what? I don't need experience. I need people that have a great attitude, that are positive, that are authentic, and I can train them if they're willing to learn.
And so this is like this industry specifically, it is very people centric. We're not Amazon making widgets in a factory and shipping it out with robots. Like we are using human labor and human and people to be able to get the job done. And yet I will say our industry is also kind of known for being a bit harsh and shrewd and cruel to each other. And I know there's a bit of that fading with the new generation, but it's still a bit of a thing. Like, why do we find this so hard in our industry to have good leadership and good culture? Like, what's going on with us?
I think there's a barrier to authenticity, right? I think there has to be, I think some people feel like you have to be rough and tough to be a leader, when in fact that doesn't necessarily work with everybody. But what does make this industry interesting, and to your point, is that unlike most companies, most industries, look, if we have a manufacturing facility, there'll be a bunch of people working in the factory that never ever talk to the customer. In the home services and construction industry, essentially everybody is interacting with the customer, whether it's on the phone or face to face. So So again, how people behave matters, and how do you get the best out of it? We have to teach people how to behave. We have to teach them how to talk to others. I mean, you know, I remember early on that we had to take our installers. We expected this 5-star experience that we wanted our installers to provide, but maybe they've never experienced one for themselves. We have to show them what is a really beautiful restaurant with tablecloths and silverware and great china and unbelievable service look like, so we can replicate it. I think there's a lot of that too.
Yeah,
sometimes people don't know what it looks like.
It's a sign that sits in my bathroom that says, "Be the change you wish to see in the world."
I love that.
Right. I have to start this if I want my people to start this. And I will say, I've seen this. So we have a bunch of members we work with at Breakthrough Academy. A lot of them are in the newer generation, not all of them, but a lot of them are. And they do have this new mindset of like, I want to be a good leader and I want to be a good developer of people. And I have some other friends that just work for construction companies have been around for 30, 40 years, and it's just everyone's swearing at each other. Everyone's putting each other down, and it's like a very toxic culture. And I think over the last 10, probably 20 years, you've probably seen this more than I have, that toxic culture is being, you know, basically faded out. And there's this new generation coming in, starting to make change.
Who wants to work for a boss, right? Who wants to work in that kind of environment when there are so many options out there? And you're right. I do believe that the younger generation is much more excited about purpose and meaning and impact and all of these things that bringing out the best in others. And there are plenty of organizations that provide that, and that's attractive. And look, when a company doesn't provide it, all they're really doing is providing a job. And I think that's a real shame. As I wrote about in my book, 60% of U.S. adults have left a job simply to get away from a manager. Now that's a doggone shame. Companies that struggle with high turnover or inconsistent results or shrinking margins and all of these sorts of things. I mean, a lot of it comes down to culture and organizational alignment. So I hoped that my book would solve some of those challenges for people.
We got to get into this. Yeah. I'll just say one note on that. I constantly think about this one thought of like, am I creating transactional or non-transactional relationships? And this isn't just with my team. This is with our customers, with our vendors, with anyone in business. Because I think if we can learn to have non-transactional relationships in business and in life, so much more can be opened up to us.
Danny, we have to go there. Okay. We have to go there because you're right. In fact, when a salesperson is in a slump, we all had salespeople in slumps, and we kind of want to steer them back to the scripting or the sales model and all these sort of things. But in reality, what happens is I believe they get transactional. I believe they go after appointment after appointment after appointment, and they fall into this transactional mode. And I like to send a sales rep that's in a slump back to talk to previous customers, learn about what it is you sold. What difference did you make in their life? Get into the relationship side. And as leaders of the business, how often do we have meetings inside of our organization where we're talking about the KPIs of the business, the marketing percentage, the material percentage, the labor percentage, all these transactional figures, or we're talking about the really upset customer? But what about the happy customer? How often do we bring that to our meetings? And I think if we want to create a business that's about relationships, we should always keep an empty chair in every single meeting that's for the customer. So we're always talking about that customer too, and not just about the numbers of the business.
Get to know the people. I think about that even as like a boss. I'm like, I hope people know that I just like wake up tired in the morning. I like brush my teeth. I watch a bit of YouTube. I go and make some coffee. Like I, you know, hang out with my kids and then send them off to school and they don't get ready in time and I have to chase them around their underwear. Like I'm just a human. And so are all the people that work with me. And so are all of my customers. And we're all doing the same stuff, especially in the morning. And I'm like, we're not like, there's nothing to be afraid of. You don't have to put on a mask to be a certain way. Just be you.
Right. Authenticity.
So let's get into this. You've got five, I would say, pretty foundational pillars to build leadership and culture within a contracting business. Reading through it, I've got kind of like some of the titles. I'd love to just like spit them off to you and give us some context. Give us some insight into what each one of them means and some nuggets that we could utilize while we listen to this podcast. So let's start with this first one. Belief is transferable. What do you mean by that?
So I'll tell you where that came from. Danny, I had an epiphany. I did. I legitimately had an epiphany. I could tell. I know exactly when it happened. We were sponsoring a music festival in our bath remodeling business. And at the music festival, we would set up these shower displays. But instead of putting like soap and towels inside of the shower displays, we put music instruments, microphones, and speakers in there. And we invited people to come on by and sing in our shower. And once we got a certain amount of people singing in our shower, we would send a kid to music school for a year. And we did that year after year. We did this. It was really cool. It was part of our cause marketing. But it was this particular year. It was right after the music festival. We selected our kid. My wife and I are sitting out on the porch in Appleton, Wisconsin, reflecting on it. And, you know, I thought, you know, when the community is in a better place, we feel better. You know, when the business is in a better place, we feel better. And my epiphany was that for the business to reach its potential, the people inside of the business first had to reach theirs. In other words, the lid of the business was directly connected to the lid of the people. I had my role, my epiphany was, I now know what my role is. My role as the leader of this organization is I have to not only help people realize their potential, but also reach it. And the thing that often stops that is something called FUD, which stands for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. We have these voices inside of our head that tell us we can't do stuff. It's crazy. And belief is transferable is about silencing the sound of FUD. Letting people know, you know what? I know you can do this. I really believe in you. And here's why I believe in you. Because the more we believe in somebody else, the more they start to believe in themselves, especially when it comes to things they've never done before. And that's the first step and really starting to expand somebody's potential. And that's why belief is transferable is the very first pillar.
You touched on a couple of things there that I think about. It's like, one is that I think all of us as humans naturally have a fear of the unknown, which is like, sure. I'm new to this. I've never sold a job this big before. I've never produced a job this big before. I've never been in the office and worked on this many financials before. Like, and so there's fear of the unknown. All of us have it. And they need someone, like you just said, to believe in us. And it reminds me of a manager I had years ago when I was a lot younger. And he told me something. He said, Danny, when you put, you know, a 5 over someone's head, guess how they're going to show up to work? Like a 5. When you put a 10 over somebody's head, guess how they're going to show up? They're going to show up like a 10. So be careful about how you engage with people, because your internal dialogue of what you think of somebody, they'll end up becoming that, even if they had more inside of them.
Right. You know, I also think with my kids, right? We have 6 kids. And I think about when I started to teach my kids how to ride on 2 wheels, I didn't just take the training wheels off and let them go on their own. I took the training wheels off. I held onto the back seat, ran behind them. And I said, you could do this. You can do this. You got it. I believe in you. You got it. You got it. And eventually they start pedaling. They say, look at me, Dad, I can do this. And the belief that was necessary, my child needed my belief so that they could have that belief. It's just an important part of growth. So the power of words that with people is significant, which is why we should always understand that and be aware of that too.
Amazing. Next one. Leaders shape culture through purpose and direction. When I read that title, I was like, okay, I think I know what this is, but there's more to it than this. So give us some insight on this.
Yeah. To give an example, because I live in Wisconsin, there are 2 conditions to living in Wisconsin. You have to like the Packers, and you essentially have to ride a motorcycle, Harley Davidson. So I have a Harley, and I love to go on these random roads down these streets that I've never been on, and maybe it's a small country road, get halfway down the road, not like it, turn around, go back the other way, maybe stop and smoke a cigar, and then get back on my motorcycle again. So, and that's fine if it's just me. But imagine if I had 20 other motorcycles trying to follow me, right? And they were like, okay, now we're turning around, now we're smoking cigars, what are we doing here? They'd never want to go on another trip with me because they don't know where they're going, and they don't know the purpose of the trip. And people inside of your organization need that too, to just hire somebody and give them a job and not let them know where the business is going. What is the purpose of the organization? Why are we here? Where is this business going? What is your role in helping us get there? What what sort of culture do we need? Leaders shape culture through purpose and direction. Your purpose is your mission statement, why you exist. Your direction is your vision statement. What do you aspire to become, and how do you win as a team? And it should really help people understand the behaviors that are appreciated and needed in order to help the business get there. It also helps people understand what their specific role is, because everybody in the business is important. And the more they know that, the more meaningful the business becomes to them.
I think about it in this term of like, we're going to go build a castle. and I have no idea how to do it. And I really need your help. Can we go do this? And it's going to be hard. And we're going to take a long time to do it. But do you want to go build this castle with me? Versus, do you want a job? Do you want to lay bricks all day? It's a very different conversation.
Yeah. What is the saying? If you want to build a mighty ship to sail across the ocean, don't just hire a whole bunch of people to swing a hammer. First, get them to yearn for the open sea, and they'll build a more magnificent ship than you could ever imagine. And you know, all these things are important because culture matters, and culture is shaped by the lowest level of acceptable behavior. So people have to know what the acceptable behavior is because it impacts the culture.
That was the other thing you touched on in that chapter. I wanted to talk a bit about that. So, because what we just talked about is what I think a lot of people talk about, which is to have a vision that people strive for. But what's this other comment around the back end, which is the lowest level acceptable behavior?
Yeah, what we as leaders tolerate, we actually attract more of. If you're having a meeting and you're allowing people to come into your meeting 10 minutes late, I promise you, you'll have more and more people coming into your meeting 10 minutes late because everybody knows that's okay. You know, what we tolerate, we attract more of. And we have to realize that if you believe in the principle that culture and mindset drive performance of the organization, then we also have to understand that culture is shaped by the lowest level of acceptable behavior. And we have to prune our culture because we don't want to, because if it means something, then you have to protect it. And you can't tolerate other people that don't honor or fit with it.
It's interesting. You're touching on two like almost opposite thoughts, which is aspiration and then discipline on the bottom line. And to be that dual personality, because I do think people are naturally more aggressive versus passive aggressive. I think they will gravitate to one of those two tactics a little more, but it's important, like you're saying, to be both.
Yeah. Look, I think if you're trying to build a winning team, then you have to surround yourself with winners, right? You have to have people that align to the winning strategy of the business. And if they don't align, then you wish them to be successful somewhere else. Sure, you want to try to coach them up, but if you can't, then you have to wish them well, because ultimately you're either building something special or you aren't. And if you're building something special, maybe not everybody makes it. And you know what? That's also kind of okay.
Totally okay. In fact, it leaves room for the next person to come in and find their perfect spot. And I bet you that person that was doing at their job hated it. And they didn't want to admit it because they got a paycheck and they got rent to pay and they don't want to bring it up. But the reality is you let them go, they'll go find something where they're supposed to be versus with you.
Yeah. One of the challenges I always had is in running a business, I've made the mistake. Again, I've made several mistakes growing a business. I mean, I could write a much bigger book on the mistakes I made. Maybe that'll be my next one. But I remember always being wanting the top performers that worked for my competitors, right? If there was a top performer that worked for a competitor, how do I hire that person? And anytime I tried it, it never worked out. Because first of all, just because they were successful somewhere else in that environment doesn't mean they're going to be successful in this environment. But I also learned that they don't only bring their talent with them, they bring the culture of the other organization with them. And that can be super duper disruptive. So again, we go back to, you know, building people by training and not looking for experience specifically.
Cool. Okay, let's get into this next principle here. And I've thought a lot about this one too. Leaders are aware of the echo of their voice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really important one because your team will decide what type of day they're going to have based on the type of day the leader is having. Right? The leader is stressed out, and then the people on the team are going to be stressed out. If the leader is preoccupied, the people on the team don't want to bother them. If the leader is, you know, is happy and joyous, the people are going to be happy and joyous. But the other part of being aware of your echo isn't necessarily just the things you say. It's also your actions. You know, I've got, hold on a second, Danny, my phone is ringing. I got to grab this. Hold on a second. Yeah. Hi. I'm sorry. I'm on a podcast with Danny right now with a Contractor Evolution. Could you imagine if I did that? You'd be like, Brian, what are you doing on a telephone when I'm on a podcast? It's about being present. You would never consider doing that on a podcast. Yet we do that all the time when we're having a conversation with somebody. We're checking our texts. We're answering the phone. We're not being present, whether it's at work or often even at home. And not being present sends a horrible echo. So being aware of our echo also means being present in everything we do.
I am naturally...
My phone wasn't really ringing, by the way.
I know, you're just joking. Okay. I naturally live in the future. And I find that a lot of entrepreneurs, you probably do too, Brian, like to create anything amazing in life, you see the future so vividly and you want to bring everyone there with you. But the curse to it a little bit is that you live in the future, which means being present is not a natural state of being. I had to get coaching for 2 years just to find like a little bit of ability to be present. Any just like tips on this? Like, how do we bring conscious presence to our day?
Well, I think the first part is awareness, right? And I think it's really creating, because I too have struggled with it for many, many, many years. Salespeople calling me at all hours of the night, trying to have dinner with my wife, and my phone keeps ringing and just, but it's, you know, it's like, is it work-life balance? Or is that even such a, is that a scale? And then if I'm, you know, if I'm plus or minus an hour, I pass or fail? Or is it really about being present in everything we do? So I just made a point to that, like when I'm at home, my laptop is closed, period. It's closed. I don't open up my laptop anymore. I just don't do that because I'm at home. Or if I'm going out to dinner with my wife, even though I want to rip my fingernails out sometime, I turn my phone off and I put it in my pocket. And like I said, even though I want to rip my fingernails out. So I think it's about coming up with triggers and ways that how do we stay present and engaged? And even in a meeting setting, look, we're entrepreneurs. The curse of the entrepreneur is this. It's the blessing and the curse. Entrepreneurs are fantastic decision makers. They understand things quickly, they make a decision, and they move on. And what happens in that environment in a meeting is we can often leave people in the dust, right? And we have to stay present in a meeting environment, not until we understand something, but until the very last person in the room understands it. You know, all these little things I think are so important when it comes to really developing people. So
that's a really interesting comment. I agree with you on that. And I'll say this again, whether they're diagnosed or not, I probably have it too. A lot of us have ADD. A lot of us are, you know, and it's like, whether it's just ADD in the sense of another darn distraction or physically diagnosed with ADD. You're right. We have a tendency to say, okay, I've moved on from the subject. We're all moving on now, but not everyone's like that. And so to be present to that, I'll say one thing, and I don't think this is true for everybody, but those 2 years of coaching that I got on being present, what it came down to was feeling safe. There was something about me always trying to plot and plan for the future to keep myself safe.
Yeah. And that's so great. I love that.
And I got reminded of like, you have created so much safety around in your life since your childhood, which was tumultuous to say the least. It created a track that I never turned off. And it's just like, look, you don't need to live in the future to stay safe anymore. You're already safe. And that might be a personal just like thing that I was given. But I do think a lot of entrepreneurs run out of, you know, desperation over inspiration. I hate to say it.
Well, and sometimes it also shows up in other ways. Is how many contractors do you know that they sell everything? Oh, you want something for your home? We do everything. We'll do your roof. We'll do your basement. We do everything in the house. And that always chasing that next thing, it can be very chaotic, right? And while chaos might produce revenue, it's discipline that produces profits. And how do you shift? And so we have to not create a chaotic environment. And even the concept of not staying present in meetings can create chaos, and it just fuels more and more chaos.
This is a whole podcast in itself. We won't get into it right now, but okay. Next one. Leaders model their business as a training organization. Now, I feel like I've lived this for many years, but I feel like it's very rare. I think most people have the experience of, I just go and I put my people out in the field and they just do their thing and hopefully they figure it out or sink or swim. Please explain this one. This one's important.
Like we were talking about earlier, I used to be a construction company. Then I became a sales and marketing company. But what really allowed us to grow was modeling our business like a training organization and being very intentional that when we brought somebody on, we were able to clearly give them a path to grow. That we weren't just, I used to throw people, I got an installer, let me throw them with this person, and they're out in the field for however long until somebody says, I guess they're ready to go off on their own. There was no real path for people to take in order to get to the next level in the business. And if we want to build a business, we have to commit to building people. And that's the whole point. It's the whole point of this book, is that we have to build people. And if we're going to build people, we have to train people. And oh, by the way, we better hire trainable people or we're going to be in really big trouble. Because it's hard to be a training organization when you don't hire trainable people. But we can talk about that in a minute. But so I always like to make sure I have a path for people to travel so that they understand How is my performance being measured? What are the goals for me? How do I know if I'm doing a good job at the end of the day? How do I know? And that all of that is necessary in a training organization. Or, look, if I have any hopes for empowering people, because I can either micromanage them or I can empower them. If I want an empowered environment, but I'm not doing any training, I'm probably going to have anarchy if I let people make decisions without any training in front of it. So,
yeah, there's no direction or alignment for them. I think about these two things. At Breakthrough Academy, we have this like tool we give out all the time, the employment agreement template. And it's just a template. But I find so few people actually have them. And for those who do have them, they're generic. They're basically every role has the same employment agreement. It's just the legalese of the whole thing and the person signing off. But to build an employment agreement that's specific to role and then to use that those specific deliverables and accountabilities that person has to go do to, as your template to say, what do I need to build in my training program? It's all the stuff that you just told them they signed off that they have to go do. And that is your onboarding process.
Yeah, it's great. And then when we put if we were to put somebody in the field or in the sales role, or you, it doesn't matter the role, we would have maybe 15 different things that they had to become excellent at. And it could be keeping a job site clean. It could be talking to the customer. It could be whatever. It could be the ability to mite or something, or you name it. And there would be a rating system that would start at 1 and 10, 1 being the worst, 10 being the best. And they would get rated on it on a regular basis so they could see the progress they were making in themselves. Because part of realizing our potential is we have to see the progress that we're making. And sometimes when we're in the weeds of it, we don't see it. But it also helps the person training, and it also helps the trainee so they understand, oh, I need to make progress here. How do I do that? Where do I need to get better at? Show me, teach me. It's really helpful. A clear path.
Amazing. So building a training organization out of your business, making sure that's a big part of it. Final one, I read this and I felt like I assumed when I read the title, I knew what it was. This last one actually caught me because I was like, this is probably the deepest one out of everything you wrote here.
Yeah.
Managers need a checklist. There's a lot to this one because it's not just about having a checklist, but get into this, Brian.
It's a lot to it. So if we think, first of all, what is the role of the manager, right? And what is the difference between management and leadership? And we might say that, well, leaders drive change while managers navigate the day-to-day complexities inside of the business. But it's not two different people. It's often the same person. Sometimes I have to navigate the day-to-day complexities, and other times I have to coach up and drive change in human behavior. So what happens typically in the blue-collar industry is that people are put into a management role strictly because they have the most amount of experience, regardless of their ability to coach and develop others. And your manager is essentially the custodian of your company's culture, because they are the ones doing the training and the promoting and the compensating and the terminating and the rewarding. So how they do those things affects how people think and feel about the business. And therefore they are the custodians. They need a roadmap as much as anybody else needs a roadmap. You wouldn't hire somebody to install something for you if they didn't know what they were doing without any formal training. Managers need that training. And the book actually provides the 10 practices to top performing managers. So you understand exactly how should a manager perform? What do the best in class managers do? Because it really does help the business.
So again, a lot of our members, $1 to $10 million in revenue, which means, especially at a million and up, they're starting to hire middle managers for the first time. And what's interesting is the last person to be in that role was the entrepreneur, which means that entrepreneur had no systems, had no training for themselves. They just kind of figured it out in their own brain. So these managers, unfortunately, are getting put into roles that are not well-defined, and there is no training for it because it was the entrepreneur that was the last person in that role. How do we do better than this?
Right. And how do we not turn our managers into senior admin assistants that are really so stuck in paperwork all day that they don't have time to work with their people, or putting out one fire after another, and they don't have any time to work with their people? You know, a great managers build a business. Great managers are part of your bench strength, and they're so important to the organization, because the other thing that happens is as a business gets bigger and bigger and bigger, the CEO is actually getting further and further away from the customer. So we start to not really understand what's happening inside of the business. And, you know, we could talk about how to find that out in a second, but your managers are close to the people that are talking to the customers. How they perform their role significantly matters. And And having a map, having a blueprint on how to be a great manager is super important.
Can you give us some of these principles? Because when I was reading them, I was like, these are gold. Let's give us a few.
The umbrella concept is that to be an effective coach and mentor. So if they're not passionate about, even if they don't know how to, but if they don't have any desire to coach and mentor others, if they just want to manage stuff, they're probably not going to be a manager on my team. The second one is the idea that leading with a team vision statement, just like the organization needs a vision statement, a team needs a vision statement. You know, we aspire to become a world-class production company committed to making customers happy. We win by keeping a positive attitude, always training and developing each other, and always showing up on time. Whatever that vision statement is for the team, when you bring other people onto the team, they now know, oh, okay, this is how I'm supposed to behave. This is what it means to be on this team, and this is where we're going. And that's what a manager does. Another one is the idea of practicing empowerment and how do you give people a voice and let their voice be heard? And I can keep going. Communicating effectively is KPI focused and accountable. There are essentially 10 different practices, and each one inside of the book has a good explanation on how to plug it into the business.
Let's go into one. Let's go into one a little deeper. We've got some time here. What would be like, out of all the different 10, what would be one where you'd be like, this would be really good for everyone listening to kind of like soak in a little more?
Sure. Discusses performance and career development.
Okay.
I think that performance reviews don't happen often enough and often happen the wrong way when they do happen. And we shouldn't wait. People shouldn't be surprised if they're getting terminated or if they're not hitting their targets or KPIs that the business needs. Being able to sit down with somebody in a controlled environment with the phone off and it's their time and it's all their time and trying to not only have a conversation about their performance and their KPIs, but also about how their personal behavior aligns to both the mission and the vision of the business and to understand, where do they want to go inside of the organization? Why are they working to begin with? I mean, they're certainly not working just for me. I mean, are they trying to buy a home? Are they trying to get a new car? Are they having a kid? You know, and how can we connect achieving or exceeding KPIs as a way to take them to their ultimate goal a whole lot quicker? The other thing that I like to do in a performance review is what's called a stay survey. When somebody quits, you might do an exit survey and ask them some questions, and it's more like an autopsy. Okay, the patient died. Sorry, it didn't work out. See you later. But part of a good performance review is a stay interview, and a stay interview is four questions. You know, what makes you want to come to work every day? What would one day make you want to leave? Number three is, what is one thing the company is doing wrong today? And number four is, what is one thing you're not getting from your manager that you think you really need? And trying to understand that really, it not only helps the teammate, but it also helps the manager, because a manager needs feedback as well.
Asking the hard questions that you probably don't want the answer to, but if you were given them, would make you a much better manager and developer people.
Yeah. Danny, I used to ask the question, what is the company doing wrong today? And I get the big long list. I'm like, what is one thing the company is doing wrong today?
Oh, man. Yeah. You know what? It's interesting. When I sit down with my people, you mentioned something about alignment on goals. And I think about this concept of like, you don't work for me and I'm not just your boss. We're in war together. Where do you want to go? And when we get through it together, what's important to you? What's important to me? Let's make sure we come out on top together. And
that's right.
And it's so many things with like their life. The first employee I ever had at Breakthrough Academy, Caitlin Kaufman, still with us today, 10 years later. I remember she started with me for $15 an hour. I was working out of my basement. We were starting this thing. And I said, Caitlin, all I can do is 15 bucks an hour. So like, you know what? I'll do this with you for now, that one day, hopefully this goes well. Like, we can really build something together. And I remember 2 years in, I got to finally give her like a proper salaried position. And I got to have this conversation with her. I was like, Caitlin, it's been 2 years. Thank you so much for the last 2 years, by the way. What do you want? Right. And she's like, I want to get married. I want to have a kid. I want to buy at least a condo, have my own.
Yeah.
And there's so much in that 10 years later, she's got all those things. And I'm watching her, and we still talk to this day. And I'm like, Caitlin, like, we did it. Like, look, we built this BTA thing and you have this sick life. And you remember working for $15 an hour, just trusting that we were going to do this. And we did. And it's just, we aligned. And I find that when you can reach that depth with somebody on your team, there's no more red tape. There's no more transactional relationships there. We are here trying to build something together.
That's right. And turnover really kind of goes away. We didn't really struggle with the turnover issue. You know, our mission statement was always to do well and do good. And we defined it as meaning, what is the purpose of business? It's to make a decent profit decently. That's how we described it. And everybody had a role in it, which will help align people around it. Because it's when we believe to do well and do good, that doesn't just stay at work, that comes home with us as well. And, you know, it's something we can teach our kids. You know, it's like, when I think about what I want for all of our kids, do I want them to be successful? Of course, I want them to be wildly successful. I want them to be happy. But most of all, I want them to be decent. I want them to be decent human beings. And again, if I can help, whether it's an employee or my kid, help them achieve their dream while being decent at the same time, then you know what? I think we did pretty good in life.
You done good, as my friends would say to me. You done good. Now, I want to ask you this because people are listening to this. And so anyone that's made it this far on the podcast, congratulations. what's the right way to say this? How do we actually take what we're listening to right now and just is actually go and start implementing something? Because I find there's ideas and then there's reality. And then you get back into the site and then everyone's hard to deal with. And what are some simple steps? What are some obstacles we're going to hit? And what are some simple steps to get through that?
Yeah, well, look, I wanted to make the book relatable, but also highly actionable, right? We can today go up to somebody that works with us and tell them why we believe in them. We can today turn our phone off when we're having a meeting with someone. We can today start to make a decision to analyze, do we have a mission and vision that makes sense, that activates people, or is it some marketing line on a website? There are things we can absolutely do today. You know, we can today say, I've got somebody that's a high culture fit, but a really low performer. I need to coach that person up today. I need to do something about that. I can't allow that to continue. If somebody's 5 minutes late to a meeting, we can today, if we're having a Zoom meeting with our team and somebody's got a camera off, we can say, hey, with our team, you turn your camera on. We can today do a reset.
Great. These are all simple little things they could literally do at the end of this podcast. So thank you. I have an interesting question for you. You have made it so far in life, and I know I'm on the journey. A lot of us are on the journey to figure out maybe not all of us have as big of a vision as Brian's got in his life, but you know, we're on our own journey. Going back to your earlier version of yourself, when maybe you were at that plastic table, maybe it was a few years after that, but you're just grinding, you're hustling, you're trying to figure it out. What is the one thing you would go back and tell yourself?
I mean, it would be, dude, focus, stop chasing everything, focus, you know, constantly chasing the next shiny object in business. The businesses that I owned didn't really scale until I started removing complexity from the business. Until I started saying, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. We're only going to do this. In fact, my bath remodeling business, we were doing 500 bath remodeling projects a month when I sold the business. But that's all we did. But we wouldn't do the toilet. We wouldn't do the flooring. We wouldn't do the vanity. We only did the shower or the tub area. The window business that I still sit on the board for my leadership team that bought that business from me, they're doing $120 million a year in replacement windows in Wisconsin, where there are more cows than people. And all they do is replacement windows. What I would say to my younger self is focus, because we think we have to do everything when in fact, simplicity is what scales. Complexity is the enemy to scaling.
Amazing. We hear this all the time, but not from people like you, Brian. So that packs a lot of punch. Okay. Well, those who made it, there you go. You get a little extra tip. And I would say that could be a big one for today. So awesome. Brian, thank you. This is great. I was stoked to do this with you. I love your vibe. I love what you've brought to this industry. I'm stoked. If you guys can get Brian's book, read it. It's a great read. Brian, any just like final thoughts and this, how do we connect with you?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you how you connect with me first, then I'll give you my final thought. You can go to my website, it's briangottlieb.com, and you can get my book, by the way, on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Right now, it's in the Hudson bookstores and the airports. It's a great read. It's also a great audiobook if you like that.
Beyond the Hammer. I want to make sure everyone knows the name again. We said it earlier.
Beyond the Hammer. Yeah. What I would leave people with is the idea that, you know, what's cool about the blue-collar industry is it doesn't matter what type of car people drive. It doesn't matter their education level. It doesn't matter what matters is what's inside of their heart, you know. And if when they have the right things inside of their heart and the right mindset, they can have a career of their wildest dreams. And you can propel that when you believe in them and when you help develop them. And what I promise you is this, that when you see yourself really being a builder of people, you'll realize, like I realized, that the two most important days of your life are the day that you're born and the day you finally realize why.
Wow. Wow. We could end this podcast right now. I don't know if you want to go into this, but could you tell me about that day?
The day keeps showing up, you know. It's just, but it's, you know, I realized what my purpose was. And I choose to, people ask me, Brian, you sold all your businesses. Why are you still involved in this kind of stuff? Because I feel the way I can make a positive impact is through the entrepreneur, because they affect so many people in this industry that I think that has a bigger ripple effect. And if I can every day wake up and go to sleep and say, you know what, I made a positive impact today, then I think it was a good day.
You know what you're speaking to, Brian? You're speaking to the fact that you went out and grind, you built a big business, you did well. And at the end of it all, you found probably the why you had the whole time, which was driving your people. You found a way to do that completely outside of just the traditional business you had. And this is probably why you wrote the book. This is probably why we're talking on the podcast. Sure. This is why you gave us your time, Brian, which I appreciate. Yeah. You're living your why right now, man. So
thank you.
Cool. Okay. Let's call it a day. Brian,
have a great day, everybody. Appreciate you. Go get it, man.
Okay. Talk to you guys later. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.